Welcome to the Autoimmune Connections Podcast. I'm your host, Tammy Anderson of ThrivingPrimallyWellness.com. I'm an adventure enthusiast, a survivor of an autoimmune health crisis, and a certified functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner who helps people who are struggling with chronic health conditions rebuild their health and reclaim their lives. I have created Autoimmune Connections to bring you hope and to empower you to take control of your own health and become the healthiest, happiest version of you. Each week, I will bring you the stories of real people who struggled with long-term chronic health issues or autoimmune conditions who reclaimed their health and their lives by making changes to their diet and lifestyle after being failed by the conventional medicine sick care model. On occasion, I will bring you experts in the health and wellness space. Often people who themselves reclaimed their health and their lives from the brink of disaster by taking their health into their own hands. The content of this show is for general informational purposes only and is not intended to serve as a substitution for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or to treat or cure any illness or medical condition. I will end each episode with a weekly nudge, or in other words, a little nudge of encouragement to try something new that will move you towards improved health. Happy journeys, everyone, and enjoy the show. Hey friends, thanks for listening in. I hope you're ready to be entertained today as my guest, Corey Broughton, unravels her story of triumph over a lifetime of chronic health issues, including multiple autoimmune conditions and a host of complications that accompanied them. Corey is a woman on a mission. After spending decades chasing the idea that all the answers were outside of herself, she has finally realized that all she ever really needed was already within her. She is on fire to help other women find their own identity and stop the shaming, struggling, and suffering. She uses the power of her own story and the tools she learned firsthand to dig herself out of the pit. She lives in Memphis with her husband and three amazing homeschooled kids, and if you're visiting Memphis, you can find her performing with Memphis's only LGBT theater group. Corey also holds a bachelor's degree in psychology and is currently seeking her certification in life coaching under Dr. Martha Beck. Corey, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Tammy. I'm excited.
You're sure welcome. I'm really excited for you to tell my audience your story. You have quite the compelling story of really serious struggles with your health that have ended with a really awesome ending. So can you paint the picture for the audience of maybe some background in terms of your history, what your health was like before it started going downhill, and when that transition happened, and then, you know, what your journey looked like beyond that?
Sure. It's a saga, so hold on tight.
We love sagas.
You love a good saga? Okay. Well, you know, looking back, I realized that, you know, I was probably priming the pump for this autoimmune story for, like, my whole life. My mom would always tell people that I had a delicate constitution, was how she said it. I just would always have, you know, the weird reaction to the vaccine. I would get the odd virus that nobody had ever heard of. You know, oh, she's got this. Now, what is that? You know, they thought I had leukemia at one point, and it turned out to be something called ITP, which is, it has a really, really long name that I can't, you know, pronounce or recall. But, you know, I spent some time early on in the hospital for that. And so it's just, it was kind of always something like that, but never anything that, I guess was very, it wasn't debilitating.
And what age was that you had the ITP?
That was age like 2 and 3.
Okay.
I would get these, like, imprints of bruises on my body. Like, my mom was so afraid to take me places because she thought, oh, somebody is going to think that I'm abusing her because she's got handprints on her legs, on her thigh. You know, like, wherever she would pick me up, it would leave, you know, handprints. And so she was just, oh, my gosh, I know this is leukemia. This is what this is.
That's what I would think.
Right?
Right.
And so we have some fantastic children's hospitals here in Memphis, St. Jude and Le Bonheur, and so I spent time at those places, and they found out that it was ITP. So it was actually, I mean, the virus acted a lot like leukemia on the surface, but it was viral, and, you know, eventually played itself out, as most viruses do.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Prior to this diagnosis, so you had been sick a lot prior to this. Had you had, were you one of those kids that had a lot of ear infections, taking a lot of antibiotics?
I didn't have a lot of ear infections, but I almost always kept like strep or tonsillitis.
So you were on a lot of antibiotics prior to this?
I was on a lot of antibiotics. Okay. I had my tonsils removed when I was 17. After, you know, just suffering with it. And my mom, you know, just kind of made, I don't remember her asking me if I wanted to do it. She may have. But her, you know, she was like, we're just getting those things out. Like, we cannot do this anymore. And I haven't had, gosh, like knock wood, I haven't had a case of strep or tonsillitis since the age of 17. So, I guess in my case, you know, it was helpful, and they don't do it nearly as often as they used to. But I think basically she just went in there and said, hey, I want these out, take them out. And they said, sure thing. Let's do it.
We
did. Yeah. So that's just kind of, you know, background as far as when I was a kid. I also, even in high school, I used to get things like, oh, this is like embarrassing. Like, I remember being in geometry class and I had sciatica. Like, what 17-year-old girl has sciatica and has to stand up to do her geometry in the back of the high school classroom, you know? But it would hurt so bad down the back of my legs, you know, that I couldn't just sit there. I couldn't sit for a straight hour. I had to get up. And so, I mean, I remember, like, I was just sort of humiliated, like, oh, my God, this is an old person disease. What am I doing having an old person disease? Same age frame. I worked at TCBY. It was my first job, pumping yogurt, right? And so from the repetitive motion of pumping yogurt into someone's cup or cone, I got tendonitis in my rotator cuff.
So you were really, lots of inflammation.
And nobody was saying that word back then.
No.
I mean, that was 20 years ago, and nobody said anything about inflammation. Like, I literally just thought I had old people disease. You know, like, I've got old people genes, and that's what's happening.
I'm just unlucky, right? That was the narrative.
Right?
I'm just unlucky.
Well, I do literally think that I had one of my doctors say, well, I mean, these things are common in old people, you know, if you were old. And so I was like, oh, my God, I'm just really old. I'm aging so fast. But nobody ever said the word inflammation back then.
Yeah, well, I don't think they knew.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that was kind of the up till, say, you know, graduating high school story. I had some, you know, pretty good years in college. I did fairly well. I don't remember, like, a lot going on at that point. The next, like, major thing for me was when I got pregnant. I got pregnant with twin boys I got pregnant in 2001. They were delivered in 2002. And honestly, it went pretty well. It was really probably the best. There was a short span right in the middle in my second trimester where, even to this day, I kind of remember, like, that was the best I'd ever felt. It was like pregnancy put me, like, in that sweet spot.
Interesting.
I felt good in my body, like, you know, like, body confidence wise. I felt just, it was the best I'd ever felt in my own skin. And, you know, even physically, after I got over, I did have morning sickness, but after that went away, I just remember feeling like, this is the bomb, you know? Like, I remember turning to my husband and like, is this what it feels like? Oh, is your body supposed to feel like this? It feels good, you know? Like, I had energy. Like, as soon as I got over the morning sickness, I mean, it was just something completely different that I realized, oh, my gosh, maybe I've actually never felt well. Maybe I've never felt well my whole life.
You just didn't know what feeling well felt like.
I just didn't know what it felt like. And I was like, man, this is good. And so I had about 2 solid months of that until my blood pressure went through the roof and I developed preeclampsia and got put in the hospital. So,
the calm before the storm.
Yes, it came on just like out of the blue. I started seeing spots one day while I was at work, and I was like, oh, what is that? I don't understand what's going on. And, you know, called my obstetrician, and, you know, they were like, yeah, you need to come in. And so once I got in there, they realized my blood pressure was really high. And once they started monitoring the boys, they realized they weren't growing. And so stayed in the hospital for a couple of weeks, and then they delivered them via emergency C-section because it was getting dangerous for all three of us.
Man.
So I had them. They were 2 pounds, 11 ounces each.
How many weeks were they born?
They were born at 31 weeks, but they quit growing at 29. So I had been in there from 29 to 31 weeks, and they had been doing like some 4D ultrasounds and different tests, and realized like that they, the whole time I had been there, they were not growing. So technically they could have quit growing before 29 weeks. That's just, you know, that's when they started getting monitored on the daily.
Right.
So we know they didn't do any growing after that. So they just came in one day. They were like, "How did April 23rd sound for a birthday?" And I was just like, "I don't know. I mean, I guess it's fine. I mean, my birthday's in March." They're like, no, for your kids. I was like, "Oh, today, like, we're doing this now?" And they're like, "Yeah." So I was like, "Okay." So they came in, did that emergency C-section, and, you know, the 2 pounds, 11 ounces each. But, and they stayed in the hospital for 7 weeks. I was able to go maybe 4 or 5 days later once my blood pressure came down. And, you know, they have done fantastically. And really and truly, I did pretty well. After I came back from that, I did pretty well. I was able to pump for them for like 13 and a half, 14 months.
So you were still able to nurse them. That's amazing. I mean, that's awesome.
Nurse, because they were just raised in the NICU on, you know, a bottle on a drip feed, and so they just didn't develop that, you know, jaw strength to be able to do it. And I was pretty devastated about that fact. Like, I'm very type A, which plays into this as well.
Of course.
And you guys are nursing, like, we're doing this. But the point came where I just had to kind of grieve that loss and figure out what we were going to do. And I was just determined, especially since they were so premature, that we were nursing. Like, come hell or high water, this is what was happening.
I am nursing my babies correctly.
Yes, like, so that's what I'm doing. And so, yeah, and that stuff, I'm telling you, looked like melted butter. I mean, the whole time, and I've had another baby since then, and realized that's not always what it looks like, but my body just came through, and I couldn't believe, like, I would bring literal mason jars, like the big ones, like not even, I'm talking about big,
not the quart jar size, but the
yes
the big, like the 2 quart ones.
Yes, bringing those full of milk to the NICU, and those nurses like, "You are a milk machine. I've never seen anything like it." And every time it just looked like I had melted sticks of Kerrygold butter. Like, I didn't have Kerrygold butter back in the day, but that's what it looked like. It didn't even look like the cheap butter.
What was your diet like when you were pregnant? Did you eat an awesome diet, or had you not quite figured that out yet?
Honestly, it didn't look like it did now. Now, I thought it was pretty healthy because I had been a vegetarian for about a year before I got pregnant. And the boys, like, all they wanted was protein. Like, I could not get rid of the morning sickness, and I could not get to feeling better until I added that back in. Yeah. I remember, like, trying to trick myself and, like, I'll dip fries in honey mustard and they'll think it's chicken tender. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'll do. I'll really pull one over on them, you know? But they were having none of it. And so I remember, like, the first time I ate chicken, you know, I was like, "Oh my gosh, my stomach, it feels so good." Like, the nausea was, like, completely gone. I was like, "Oh my goodness, this is magic." So I never went back to the vegetarian days. I probably ate a fair amount of fat, because I craved it. Like, I craved peanut butter and cheese. I didn't crave sugary things when I was pregnant with them. But I really craved fat and protein a lot, and quite a bit of it. And I just loved
what your body was saying it needed.
Yeah. And so I just listened. I wasn't paying really close attention to it though, but what I can say, Tammy, is like one of those times, just kind of like when I was pregnant with them, where I was just really tuned into my body, which is probably why I felt good. I felt so connected to those babies and so just meant to be doing what I was doing. So I was listening. I was just listening really well. I didn't have a lot of that story that I, you know, had up until then. And honestly, that, you know, I've still struggled with since then, like, don't have this, or you can't have this, or you shouldn't have this, or that's enough, or whatever, you know, following somebody else's plan. It was very intuitive. The whole thing.
Taking care of my babies.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's probably that part of it, is I felt like it was for them. And so I just tuned in and listened, you know, and my body just took it and ran with it. So
that's amazing. That's great.
We were able to nurse for, no, pump, I should say pump, pump and bottle feed for about 14 months exclusively. And so that was just brilliant. And, you know, we were told that they would likely have hearing trouble, vision trouble, learning disabilities, just any number of things. Before, you know, they came in to deliver them, they had to come in and say, here, here's the laundry list of things that could go wrong with babies that we deliver, you know, at this many weeks. And they've had none of that, just nothing. It's, you know, it was amazing. And I do
from 2.2 pound, 11 pound babies. That's pretty, it's pretty amazing. That's a success story right there.
Yeah. So, and I do think, I mean, I think that milk had something to do with it. You know, I really, really do.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you.
So I recovered from that and I tried. They were so fantastic, and I loved being a mommy so much. And to be honest, I loved being pregnant. Like, I wanted to be pregnant again because I wanted to feel that good again. So I was just bound and determined that we were going to do this again. So it took about 4.5 years, which was hard. I ended up doing some Clomid and different fertility treatments. I had a couple of invasive tests to look at why I wasn't able to get pregnant, because I got pregnant with them on the very first time. It was the first time we had ever taking a chance,
blowing caution to the wind.
Right, the first step. And what did I come up with? Twins, you know? And so I just had it in my mind that one more shot and we'll just get another couple, right? Like, this will be so easy. And it was not. It was really hard. It was hard on our marriage. It was, you know, hard emotionally. It was hard because I couldn't really talk about it because nobody wanted to hear the story of a woman that had two kids and was heartbroken because she couldn't have a third. Mm. You know, I got that story a lot of, why aren't you grateful for the two kids you have? You know, like, some women don't have any. Talk about it a whole lot either. But on the inside of our four walls, we were kind of devastated. So it wasn't until, you know, we had done the test, we tried the drugs, my husband had, you know, done testing as well. He was, you know, right in there with me. I decided I can't do this anymore. I'd had a couple of what looked like really early miscarriages, and I really was just kind of grieving every month when it didn't happen, and I had just kind of decided, can't be done. Can't do it anymore. It's killing me. So, We got rid of all, you know, of course we had two of everything. And so we got rid of every last piece of clothing, the cribs, the whole bit. Because I was like, all right, we're just going to turn this thing around. I'm going to go do something else for me. It's not going to be babies. And that was probably in, you know, May or June. And I got pregnant in October.
Yeah. That story is so common when women are having trouble conceiving. As soon as they come to the accept that it's not going to happen and I'm going to go on with my life, it allows their stress level to come down.
Right.
And then, you know, stress has plays such a huge role.
That's something I know now, but I really, you know, as intuitive as I was at certain times and as educated as I was about certain things, I still wasn't really connecting the dots. You know,
right.
I couldn't just let it go and let it be. It just wasn't happening. I was too tied up in the outcome. Anyway, so we got pregnant with her in 2006, because she was born in 2007. And that pregnancy, once again, like, it started out a little easier, but I felt pretty at home in my body as far as, like, size and my physical appearance, which I've struggled with eating disorders, you know, in high school, and so that I do have a history there, and these pregnancies were just, like, a magic time for me when that just, like, would go away.
Right.
So I did have that benefit, but I didn't feel as good as I felt when I was pregnant with my boys. I developed, the word is escaping me. it's like an irregular heartbeat. CVCs, I think is what they're called. And so I was on a heart monitor for several months and had to, you know, watch that all the time, which they said it was just from stress and it would go away once I gave birth, and it did.
Mm-hmm.
But it would just do weird things, like just beat out of rhythm for a while or just, like, stop for a second. It was just like, stop, and then it would start back up.
Oh, man. And you could feel it?
Excellent. Oh, yeah, that's how I knew it, because I could hear it. I could hear it in my ear. And sometimes, like, if I would lay down, I could hear it in my ear, and I'd be like, that is not right. That is not a normal heart rhythm, you know? Because you could just, rhythm is a normal thing, you know? And it was just, the rhythm was there. It was just skipping. And so, yeah, so I was had to check in with the cardiologist a lot, and just not feeling... I just didn't have those energy levels that I experienced, you know, the last time.
With the boys.
With the boys.
And at what stage during the pregnancy was this?
Really? Well, the worst part of it was actually in the early stages. So the nausea and the needing to be monitored on the heart monitor was probably months 2 and 3.
Oh,
so it was pretty early.
Yeah, this is an entire pregnancy of worry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really early. So, but we, you know, we got through it. Once again, I went ahead and had a C-section. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but my doctor was like, oh, you're just worrying about it too much. You've had a C-section. You'll know what to expect. Just go ahead and do it. And so I was like, okay. So she made it all the way to 39 weeks, and she was just shy, like 7 pounds, 15 ounces. So I remember that was the first thing my obstetrician said when she took her out. She's like, Corey, she's big. She's big. And she's got a head full of hair. And I was like, oh, my God. We're so excited. My daughter did not love that story. I was big. I'm big. I was like, that's the best word. Like, you, we were excited to feel big.
We didn't have to spend 7 weeks in the NICU.
Right? I got to take that girl right home. So I didn't experience the high blood pressure again and stuff, so which was good. So, yeah, I got to hold on to her for a full 39 weeks. That was pretty typical. My recovery from the C-section was pretty pretty seamless, pretty easy. And I was able to nurse her just right away. And there's kind of a story embedded in this, too. I had had breast implants put in. That was my way of deciding that I was no longer going to have any more babies and if everything was going to be about me. I was like, well, I'll just fix these saggy
boots. I'm going to fix my saggy boots.
Right? I've popped for 2 babies for all this time, right? And I'm not having any more, so this is what I'll do. And so, yeah, they looked good for like 2 months until I got pregnant. And then they just looked crazy again, enormous. And... yeah, they never went back to great. So that was like 2 months of, you know, wonderful boobs, and that was the end of that. And I didn't know if I was, so because of that, I didn't know if I'd be able to nurse her. But I really, really wanted to because I, you know, I wanted to so badly with the boys, and it didn't work out that I was like, oh, yeah, you're nursing, kid. So we did, and I nursed her for about 15 to 16 months. And I would have continued nursing, except for I developed mastitis repeatedly. And this is, you know, this is part of the beginning of what, you know, came to be known as the autoimmune journey. Because the breast implants weren't causing it, is what my doctor said. But, like, on the right side, she's like, they're just creating this perfect little pocket of space where infection is just flourishing. And it's just, for whatever reason, it's hard for your body to get in and clean that little pocket out because it was just, like, coming in the same place. So she was like, is your breast implant causing it? No, not causing it, but it's really creating kind of a perfect environment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I finally, I think it was the third round that I had been hospitalized getting IV antibiotics for the mastitis, that, you know, and I was, my mom would bring the baby up there to nurse, and I think it was like the third round, and I was sitting there nursing her in the hospital, and I was like, okay, she's getting too many antibiotics, like, I'm going to quit, like, I'm finally going to quit, you know, like, I probably could have quit sooner, and we all would have been better off, but it just takes a long time for me to learn my lessons, Tammy. Like, I'm not kidding you.
You know, I think we all learn slow lessons sometimes.
So after that third round, and I also had an allergic reaction to that particular antibiotic that time. They had to give me Benadryl, which I'm allergic to, and so that was a whole nightmare. And I don't think, if I'm being really honest, I don't think I ever really came back from that. That whole episode, when she was probably about 16, you know, ish months old, it was a real kind of turning point, I think. You know, I'd had a hard pregnancy, and then I'd had those infections, and I was nursing her, and I was homeschooling my boys. We were homeschooling kindergarten at the time, and so it was just a lot, you know, going on. And so I think the combination of that stress and then, you know, the drugs, and I'm kind of a canary in the coal mine with drugs and always have been.
Right.
So like my mom will tell me like stories when they used to give me codeine or whatever, and they'd say, oh, she's going to sleep for days. And I'm like, oh my God, no, she was bouncing off the wall. Like, you know, I couldn't even control
the opposite effect.
Yes. Yeah. So that's still common to this day. You know, I had to try several different things through the course of this, autoimmune stuff. And, you know, it was never an easy decision, and there was always some price to pay for being on it. It's almost never can I get on something and be like, I don't even know that I'm on it, you know? Like, no, I can tell when I take a Tylenol, so I usually avoid it like the plague.
Right. Well, you know, listening to this story, you haven't got into the actual autoimmune piece of it, the autoimmune nightmare of it. However, listening to this story, if we were to sit down and write a timeline of Corey starting at you know, really at birth or
right.
2 years old, you have all these, you know, these signs and signals along the way, lots and lots of different medications and antibiotics, and your gut was the perfect storm for.
Yeah, and I think I was carrying a high viral load. I had mono, you know, as a teenager, and I really struggled with it. You know, like I said, like just the inflammation. And there was a lot of, I didn't know it at the time, but I know now there's a lot of mindset issues, you know, even
absolutely.
Struggling with the eating disorders and the way that I kind of abused my body.
Right.
You know, I did a lot of chronic cardio, which was terrible.
Of course. I was there too. That was part of my autoimmune journey.
I used to do the crazy thing where like I needed to see like 10,000 calories burned on the treadmill before I could get down, you know? So like I'd get on it for an hour. I mean, it was crazy. Like it's not.
The things we do to ourselves, right?
Right. So I had been preparing myself for this, you know, for a long time. And you know, another turning point. So I've talked about the vaccines a little bit. I didn't react well, but there was also when I was 15, I was amongst a group of people that, an age group where the CDC or somebody sent out something saying that, oh, this whole group of vaccines were no good or they were whatever, you have to do them over. So I got hit with a lot of those a second time because the school system, you know, came in. I was in private school, but still had to do it. And, you know, my mom didn't know any better.
Right.
You know, and I do not blame her at all. But she's like, well, okay, this is, you know, they said you need to do this, so we need to do this, you know? So we went and now she's like, I know now, watching you with that second round of vaccine, she's like, it was awful. She's like, it was awful. Like, I just didn't know what was going to happen. And had I known that I had a choice, but nobody told her she had any sort of choice, you know? She was a working mom, and, you know, the thought of homeschooling was not a thought. We didn't know anybody that did that. You know, she didn't know that there was any other option. But I really, really took a long time to come back from that.
Right.
So the whole thing has been building since forever.
Right.
You know, I just didn't know it.
You were genetically predisposed.
Absolutely.
And then when you have all of these different triggers that are just sprinkling on you all through your life, and then it just creates this perfect storm for...
Right, and that's what it was. And we have used that phrase and perfect storm numerous times. And when it really started, you know, in full effect, it was my daughter was two. It was, okay, my timeline. Okay, so it was 2009. So she was two. So actually, you see, that wasn't all that long. She was about 16 months of left breast infection, and she was two at this point. And it was Thanksgiving Day, and I was in her room making up the bed, and I felt like I got this, like a rubber band hit me in the back of my calf, and I was like, it was a very unfamiliar feeling, like pop, and I was like, oh, like it stung, or like I kind of jumped back, like even looking, like if one of the boys behind me, like, you have to stick, like,
what just happened?
And I expected to see some evidence that something had happened to my leg, that something had hit me, or that even maybe that I would see a broken blood vessel or something, but there was nothing to see. And I was like, gosh, that was weird. But, and we had company coming. It was literally Thanksgiving Day, and had everybody coming to my house.
Of course.
That's what you need. And so, you know, I was like, I tried to keep going on about my business, but by the time, you know, my mom, my family got there, it was like my leg was really hurting. And so I told my mom, and I ended up spending most of the day, like, with my leg elevated and just kind of being super, just kind of freaked out because it was so weird. I had, like, no context for it at all.
Did it keep, it just continued happening, like feeling like somebody was snapping you over and over again? With
repeatedly, but numerous times. It wasn't, like, on a constant loop, but enough that I was like, I feel like I don't know what else to do besides to put my leg up. For some whatever reason, I felt like I've got to put my leg up. Like, I can't stand with it down. So I did that, and I kind of got through that day, and it got better. And I was just like, okay, like, maybe that was just a one-off. That was so weird. But my life's kind of been like that. And so I was like, okay, I guess it's just one of those deals. And so I kind of wrote it off until February. So that was November. And then February comes around, and I'm in graduate school at this point because I do like to pile on the stuff.
Of course you are, yes. You're homeschooling, and you've got three kids, and now you're in grad school. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Volunteering at church, you know. Sometimes I would, I didn't even add all this in, but like I had other babies and kids that I was taking care of at certain points during the story. So I was like running like a daycare out of my home.
So, why am I not surprised?
Like, when I really stop and think, I'm like, oh God, what were you doing? But, so yeah, I had, my degree was in psychology, and I decided, okay, I'm going to go get back and get my master's in social work so I can do counseling because that's what I wanted to do. And, UT had a great program. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. It was mostly online, and I'm here in Memphis, and you would have some Saturdays that you drove to Nashville.
Well, it's a good reason, a good excuse to go to Nashville.
Right. Nashville's great. My brother's there. It's his son. Had a place to stay. And I did love it. I loved it. I was good at it. I liked meeting new people, new friends. And so, I mean, you know that. You saw me. So this is how I do. So I was just, you know, loving it. But one February, and this was closing in, this is my second semester. So the semester had started in January. And I was in a lecture online, kind of like we're doing today. And I was sitting here. And all of a sudden, my ears started ringing. And I'd never experienced that before. And when I say ringing, I mean like so loud that I could no longer hear the lecture. I was like, it was like screaming. Like I was like, I can't, like I couldn't hear like anything else.
Wow. That must have been a little scary.
It was so like I sat there for a minute and I was like, okay, it's just going to go away. Like maybe it's another one of my weird things and it's going to go away. So I've had panic attacks. Like I didn't throw that in, but I've had legit diagnosed, take me to the emergency room panic attacks before. So I'd gotten kind of, okay, you can breathe through this. Like you'll breathe through this and it's going to go away. It's going to be another one of those weird things. So don't freak out, you know. And, but after, I don't know exactly how long I waited, but at some point I went ahead and left the lecture, called my dad because I knew that he had experienced this ringing in the ears for years. He worked with heavy duty machinery when I was little and just working in that environment, probably without proper ear protection or whatever, it just kind of left him with some damage and right. Some pretty constant ringing. So I was like, okay, I'll call dad and see if this is what he experienced. And so I kind of at least have a name for it and know that I'm not the only one. So I did that. And he was like, yeah, that's definitely what it is. You know, he's like, maybe it'll stop. And so I was like, okay. And he's like, there's really nothing you can do about it. So I was like, okay. And so, you know, it didn't go away. It didn't go away right then. I don't have it anymore. But it just became part of a cluster of symptoms that mm-hmm. I was developing. So mm-hmm. I had the ringing in my ears. I had a lot of bloating that I was really now looking back, I was pretty dismissive of it at first because the other symptoms were so loud and aggressive that the bloating almost seemed like an afterthought, you know, right. Like I didn't have time for that because in the scheme of things, it just didn't seem as bothersome as everything else.
And doesn't every woman bloat?
Right. Like it's just right. Nighttime bloats or I don't know, you know, that food just didn't agree with me. I don't know, you know, so I just got used to that. I had pain that would run up my arms and legs. And, you know, that I think the beginning of that was the thing that was happening in my calf on that Thanksgiving, but it just continued to progress. You know, it would just get to be, it would start hurting and it would go for longer spans of time and before I would get a break from it. And at the point when I finally started getting some answers, it was pretty constant. So after the ringing in my ears, I was like, okay, I'm going to start actually looking for some actual answers. So I went to the ENT doctors. I went to my regular doctor. I went to the rheumatologist. I talked to my cardiologist. I had a cardiologist because of all the pregnancy stuff. So I went back to the cardiologist. I went to the dermatologist. So I went everywhere because once it started, it just sort of snowballed. I had sores on my arms and legs. That's why I went to the dermatologist. And those turned out to be folliculitis. Which, once again, it's one of those things where it's like not necessarily an old person's issue, but they kept saying things like, well, maybe we see this in sick people, but you're not sick.
You don't look sick, right? But your body's not functioning optimally if you've got all these symptoms.
So these, so folliculitis is just a little infection in the hair follicle, from a little bacteria or whatever. And usually dermatologists will go, oh, it'll clear up in a matter of a day or two. I would have mine for weeks. Like weeks that they would be just like open, kind of like little, they looked like kind of like aggressive pimples. They never got a whitehead or anything like that. So I knew they weren't typical pimples, but they were basically little small staph infections. And they would
sore
be
and itchy.
They were a little bit itchy. I wouldn't say they hurt, but they were mentally disconcerting.
Of course.
Why isn't this healing? I was like, these things are on my arms and they're not healing. I'm like, that just did not seem right.
Right.
But they were, my dermatologist was pretty dismissive. Yeah, it's folliculitis. It'll go away. And I'm like, but it's not going away. I'm telling you that it's not going away. And that just didn't seem to make a difference. So there was that. When I went to the ear, nose, and throat, they were like, you need an antidepressant. Like, this is anxiety. You need, this is what you need to do for it. Like, that's why you're getting the ringing in your ears. And I was like, yes, this is making me anxious as hell, no doubt, but that's not the root of this. I did know what anxiety felt like. I was like, and this isn't it. Like, there's something else going on here.
That is just such a common narrative that we are hearing, and it's so common for people to report, when they've got all these symptoms that their doctors can't explain, oh, you have anxiety or you have depression. Here's a medication that you can take for that.
Right.
Because it must be all in your head.
Right. And I was willing to admit that, yes, there's stuff going on and I'm anxious about some of this stuff, but like, we are not getting at the root of this. And I know it. I was like, I knew it. So the only other thing she did was she did send me to get a hearing test. And so I went down to do that. It was like downstairs at the same office. And that girl, I remember like, she was like blown away because she said, you're hearing tones that nobody ever hears because everything was just so on such high alert. I mean, like I could hear, we would have to just cut the electricity to the house at times. Cause like for me to sleep, cause I could hear the electricity running through the walls. I could hear it in the fan. I could hear it in the TV, even when they weren't on.
Oh my God.
Like I hear that buzzing. I'd be like, Doug, do you hear that buzzing? He's like, no, I don't hear anything. I'm like, cut the breaker. You have to cut the breaker because I can hear all of that. And I'm still sensitive to it, but at that time when it was so bad, I could just hear and feel everything, like everything that was going on underneath my skin, I could feel. And I could hear the electricity running through the walls. So
that's gotta be uncomfortable way to live.
Too much sensory overload, right?
You could just never get a break.
Yeah, and I've come to know that some people kind of live with that sort of thing all the time, that have sensory issues, and that it's terrible. So much compassion, because it was really, really difficult. So, we did have to figure out like some tricks and things to do. But it was confirmed when I did that hearing test, and she's like, oh my gosh, nobody ever hears that. Like, I can't believe you're hearing that. So I was like, she was like, yeah, well, it's not your hearing. Like, it's not damaged hearing. Because with my dad, the ear ringing was due to damaged hearing.
Right.
And in my case, that's not what was happening. My hearing was perfectly fine. So it wasn't until I went to the gastroenterologist. Yes, I had a flex fig. So they went in and did that. And he did, to his credit, he did run the blood test for celiac. It came back negative. But even looking back, I'm kind of surprised from stories I heard from other people that he even mentioned it, because this was 2000 and I guess it was 2009. So, I mean, 2009, 2010, when a lot of this was going on. And so I was actually maybe fairly forward thinking for the time.
Absolutely.
And maybe you still even to give me the flex sig, because a lot of them don't even, I think, go that far. I think a lot of times you just say IBS and do your best out the door. And IBS is kind of the diagnosis that I got, but I think he was at least relatively thorough before getting to that point. The flex sig looked good. All of the, like, initial blood work looked good. You know, when they would just, like, run, you know, a CBC, like, oh, yeah, everything, all the basic stuff, your blood count looks good, this looks good, you know. So everything kept coming back normal. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, but things are not normal.
This is not normal.
So the first time that I ever got any, like, real definitive diagnosis or really any information to go on was second trip to the rheumatologist. The first time, all we did was basically go round and round of me telling her that I felt like the pain in my arms and legs was in my veins. I was like, it feels like my veins hurt. And once again, I heard that you're too young for that to be the case. It's got to be your muscles or your joints. And I was like, I mean, but I don't, I was like, I know I had had tendonitis in my rotator cuffs and I'd had sciatica before. I'd been someone who had worked out her whole life. I knew what muscle pain felt like. So I did know, like I know now, I mean, I really did know, but of course they made me question whether I knew.
Right.
So I would say, well, I mean, I guess if it has to be one or the other, it's muscle, but I don't think it's muscle.
Right.
So
isn't it amazing? Like you go in and you know your body and you're trying to explain to the doctor what's going on in your body. And so many times people are getting the message from their doctors that what they're feeling in their body is all in their head, or, you know, like, just listen to me.
Yeah. That was absolutely my experience. And so I didn't really get anywhere that first visit, and I cannot remember exactly. Oh, I do. So I dismissed that for a while, so I went back home, and I started having some what were actually my most troubling symptoms, and that was, like, or at least troubling for me. I would be sitting in the rocking chair at my daughter's bedroom, and I would always read to her before nap time. We would sit, and we would read, because she fell asleep, and I'd rock her, and it was just sweet and wonderful, and I loved every moment of it, until there came a day when I was reading her a story, and it was like, I can't remember what story it was, but it was a fairy tale, like Cinderella. It was a story that I could have told by heart, and I couldn't make the words come out. I was looking at the words on the page, and I knew in my head what they were, but I could not make them come out my mouth. And I was like, like it was just like frozen. And this went on for probably weeks. And I would just sit there and cry. Like after she would go to sleep, I would just cry and think, oh my God, am I going to lose the ability to read her stories? Like this is heartbreaking. And, you know, during that same time period, I would have trouble, like I would drop words. Like I might say, like, I needed my husband to hand me the pan, like the pan we're cooking. I'm like, you know, that's like stainless steel. You put the food in it and we're going to put it on the stove. Like I can't. And he's like,
oh,
the
man.
Pan. I'm going for a pan, you know? And honestly,
sounds like symptoms of somebody who's had a stroke almost.
Right. And honestly, it probably was like TIA, because when I went back to the same rheumatologist, that is what she told me. She said, well, the last patient I had that presented like you ended up having mini strokes. So in all likelihood, I mean, I have not had, you know, like a CAT scan to diagnose it and look to see was there any visible damage. But in all likelihood, that is what was happening. What she diagnosed me with after that visit was the Sjogren's and then the vasculitis. So she finally went beyond the regular blood work and did some more in-depth blood work versus just kind of those you know, basic markers.
Right.
Because even the regular markers for inflammation would always come back normal. But once she did some, you know, deeper, more in-depth tests, we realized that I did have some positive markers for Sjogren's.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I actually had the marker for rheumatoid arthritis as well. So that came back. And that they had tested that before, and it came back positive one time and then negative the next time, and then it came back positive this time. So I think they really didn't know what to do with me. I was always just kind of an odd case.
Right.
But, and you know, what I know now is just like, I mean, I think I have a real tendency toward autoimmune issues, and I had a ton of inflammation. So, like, if you would catch me on a day when the inflammation was through the roof, some of these things would show up, and then other times it didn't show up. So,
right.
I did come home from that visit with, okay, it felt so good for somebody to have said, we have some sort of answer, some
right.
sort of label, some sort of diagnosis that, you know, you're not nuts and you're not making this up. You're not just super dramatic.
Right.
Uh-huh.
There is an answer.
Okay. So that felt really good. But it was also one of those things where she was also like, and you'll need to be on prednisone because we've got to get this inflammation down because of mini strokes, and that's really all I have for you. I mean, I even remember that first visit asking her, well, I mean, you know, can I do anything with my diet, like an anti-inflammatory diet? No, that's not going to do anything about this. I mean, this autoimmune disease is what it is, and we'll, you know, just try to manage it the best we can.
And what year is this again?
This would have been 2010. So, I mean, the office was so depressing because everybody else in there was so, first of all, they were old and they were all on canes, you know, and I was like, oh no, this is my
future. That is not going to be me.
That is what I saw before my eyes. So, I mean, she did have me scared enough after that visit to try to get on the prednisone. So I got it. It was terrible. I mean, it just felt like bugs crawling under my skin all the time. I couldn't sleep. I really couldn't function. We kept taking down the dose. We got it down to, I think, 5 milligrams, which was the smallest dose that they made. And I couldn't function.
Yeah. So, oh, my gosh. And that stuff messes with your blood sugar and your hormones. And
oh, yeah. And, of course, I didn't know that. Like, well, and I got rampant candida from it, too.
Of course.
I didn't know that. Yeah. But it really promotes candida, which I didn't know. But later on, I found out, oh, well, that's probably, well, plus the antibiotic use, but it really, for me, the timing seemed like the prednisone really did something to really kick that up and get it just super flared up.
You probably had an underlying case of it before that anyway, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I did it for about, you know, probably a total of a couple of months, you know, breaking down the dose and trying to get it figured out until I just said, can't do it. Like, I can't do it. Like, I can't function. I can't do this. She said, well, there's one other drug that we can give you, but like sometimes it causes blindness. It was like an old drug that they had used for malaria a long time ago or something. And so this was kind of like an off label use.
Sign me up.
She's like, I'll take it. So I was like, no, I was like, no. So, I mean, the long and short of what I did after that was for a while, I just got right with God. I was like, I don't know, you know, this, okay, if this is how I'm going out, I want to go out with some sense of peace about it, not fighting against this drug. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to try to get my head straight. So that's what I did. So I went home, I got off of that, and, you know, I didn't read a whole lot about Sjogren's at the time because I did know myself well enough to know that I just could not deep dive into everything that was involved. So I had a really dear friend and my husband who researched it and would kind of give me little bits and pieces as we went along that they thought I could handle as I could handle it.
That's nice to have that support network. Not everybody has that.
So, you know, I'd be like, okay, I think I can hear something today. Like, what do you got? You know? So that's how I kind of like built my knowledge of it in the beginning because I knew that I wasn't really in a headspace to just hear every bad thing that could happen. So, you know, I spent my time kind of getting my head right and kind of trying to find my peace. And once I did, these other options started opening up to me. My mom had friends, like she sold Shackley forever. So she had some friends that were, you know, into alternative medicine. So
right.
One of them hooked me up with a chiropractor, and I think it was like, he was somewhere around like the Portland, Oregon area. So we worked like via email and telephone. So I worked with him for a while. He had me on like 40 billion supplements. But he was the one that actually did some food testing with me where I really found out that I did have some gluten sensitivities.
Right.
Of course. I shipped him my dookie.
Mm-hmm.
So I did all that fun stuff at home, and we had all those wonderful samples in the refrigerator. And so shipped him those things. And, I mean, I know now some of those tests probably weren't perfect, but they were a good starting point. They were good at opening the door.
Yeah. I do functional lab testing in my work, and it gives some great information in helping to figure out the underlying causes of this dysfunction. So before you go on, did you find anything? Stool testing, any parasites, bacteria, viruses?
There was, I still have all the results like filed away. And I can't remember everything because like really and truly, Tammy, just like I was dropping the words and all that, because there are pieces for me, like time periods that are legit missing. I mean, they really are just missing.
Right.
And even now, that's sometimes hard because I'll see a picture of the kids and I'll think, oh, I don't even remember that time, And if I'm not careful, it will take me down a bad spiral.
I can identify with that as a parent.
So I do remember, like, I had some antibodies that were just through the roof with the gluten, oats, rye, all of that stuff. So I've been off gluten since then. So that was 2010, we're 2017, and I never went back to that because that was really clear. The other things that, as far as like the food stuff, was pretty limited. I mean, I tried a ton of different diets, but as far as the information I got from him, that was the only thing that really like jumped off the page. There was candida. There was candida in the stool. I think there was another type of like really common parasite. I'm trying to think what else. He did hormone testing. I had like the hormones of an 80-year-old woman, like I had zero progesterone, like zero testosterone. Yeah. My estrogen was super weird.
Your body was just so stressed out. You were just tanked on everything.
My cortisol levels were flipped. So I was really high at night and really low in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just obviously supposed to be the other way around,
right,
which helped explain why I couldn't sleep.
Yes.
No way you'd ever looked at any of that stuff.
You're exhausted, but you can't fall asleep.
But you can't sleep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a whole tired and wired thing.
Exactly.
So that was a constant problem. So, I mean, those were all really good, pieces of information to have that as of up to that point, and even just the fact that he told me, you can do something with this, with your diet, you can do something. He wasn't promising me miracle cures, but he was acting like there was hope, which was nice. Yeah. Because nobody else did. Nobody else did. They were like, mini strokes, you'll be a vegetable, take this prednisone, see you next week,
Exactly. Yeah, that's the narrative. That is the narrative.
So, and then once you can't sleep, we'll put you on Xanax and it goes on and on. So I was like, he wasn't necessarily my cup of tea, and it was hard because it was long distance, but I'm also very grateful for, the information that I got.
Right.
So, after that, I made a friend that was a nurse, and she had worked with a doctor here in Memphis. And so once I told her some of my story, she hooked me up with him, and he is a doctor that I actually still see. He's a traditionally trained MD, but he works more like a functional medicine doctor.
Okay.
He's paleo, and I remember like the first book he gave me was that Nora Gagaldis.
Yes.
What was that book?
Oh, geez.
You remember that?
Primal Transformations?
I don't know. I don't think, who I'm talking about.
Right? I read that book. That's a really sciencey book to start with.
He's pretty heavy
on the science.
He's super science. He's super, super smart. So he's, he's big into that. And he was the one that actually diagnosed me with Hashimoto's. So that helped fill in the blanks with a lot of the, I think a lot of the bloating even still was, it was the gluten, but the Hashimoto's was also contributing to a lot of my gut dysfunction. I had a lot of hair loss, and that was, from the Hashimoto's.
Fatigue,
yes, fatigue, like the whole thing. So that was like another piece of the story. I also ended up, he diagnosed me with interstitial cystitis, and that was kind of confirmed by my gynecologist. So, you know,
the storyteller might not know what that is. Can you give a little bit of background on that? And by the way, I just Googled it. The title of that book is Primal Body, Primal Mind.
Primal Body, Primal Mind.
Yeah, that's an intense book. She goes into some deep science in that book.
Yeah, well, and so the science is his jam. So it fits right in with him. So,
So on to the interstitial cystitis.
Yeah, so interstitial cystitis, like, what I thought I had was, like, the world's worst bladder infection, but that's not what it was, because every time I would go in, they would test it, they'd be like, no, you're clear, like, everything's clear, and I'd be like, well, something is going on. Sometimes I would feel like I needed to urinate, but I didn't, but most of the time, like, I was just going like crazy. It would just be burning pain, like, feeling I was being, like, stabbed. Honestly, sometimes inside my vagina, I'm coming up. It's like stabbing me. It was really, really low in the pelvis.
Super pleasant. Sounds super pleasant.
So pleasant. It's really sexy. Like, it's great.
Yeah.
So, and if I'm honest, that's even now to this day, that's the thing that will flare up the quickest on me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I get into a state of stress, like, I'll think, oh gosh, there comes a bladder infection. I'm like, no, that's not bladder infection. That's that. Dadgum, interstitial cystitis. But it's also exacerbated by the Sjogren's in my case, because the Sjogren's really wreaks havoc on your mucous membrane. So a lot of people might have Sjogren's and all they ever really experience, maybe dry eyes, dry mouth,
yeah.
But for me, I was dry from, we love this term, from the rooter to the tooter. We get that from Ferrick and Pickers. So if anybody watches Ferrick and Pickers, Frank Fretz says that. So like, I was dry from a rooter to my tooter.
Can I just say right now how much I love you?
Say it over and over again. Yeah, so it would just... I did not realize this, and I'm sure you know this, but the mucous membrane, that cell layer, is only one cell thick.
Yes.
So, like, once you've shot your wad with that, like, it's really gone.
It's gone.
You know, like, step back up. And that was something that no doctor had ever told me. So when they went in, there was a test that I did, and I guess, I don't know if it was Sewell test, I can't remember what test it was, but he's like, well, you have no mucous membrane like that. There's nothing there. And so it also lines your bladder. There is a mucous membrane there. Mm-hmm. So, like, when there would be things that I would eat or drink, and I would feel like I was on fire because there was no protective barrier there. And so it would just be constant, like, just a constant state of discomfort,
right.
You know? There were times when it was legitimately very painful, but more often it would just be like I was constantly uncomfortable way down low in my pelvis. It would feel like a lot of pressure, like there was, like, a boulder or something sitting on top of it, you know? But there was nothing left to come out, you know? It was mm-hmm. just a lot of pressure. So that's the interstitial cystitis. Very fun. And, you know, honestly, there's still not just a whole lot that I can do about that. Drinking more water usually helps me. I do use some essential oils that bring some degree of relief. And the other thing that's most helpful for me is doing whatever I personally do for reducing stress.
Yeah.
And that's usually where I see the quickest turnaround.
And what is that? How do you reduce that stress?
Tammy, you're so funny. That just made me laugh. Because just last night I was having a super freak out about it, right? Like, you think I would have this turned around by now, right? Like, this ship is sailing in the right direction. But what happens to me is
it's always about course correction. There's
right?
course correction.
Oh.
Like, we never have it perfect.
No, I really don't. So, just last night I was like, I've been doing really well. So, I have taken on a lot because I'm doing so great, you know, and I'm cooking dinner again every night, and I've got some paying life coaching clients, and I'm still in life coaching school, and I'm homeschooling a couple, you know, teenagers, plus my daughter who's in fifth grade, and I'm running them around, you know, and I've got new house, new puppy.
You got no stress going on in your life.
It was like Wednesday, I was just on fire, and then Thursday, I was hit the wall, and it was all over. The whole thing fell to crap. So it's still okay. Is just really, really important. It's really important. And, you know, and there are a list of things I could give you that I do, and I'm happy to give them to you. But, like, the biggest thing for me, and it's, as a type A, it's so hard for me to say, like, I even hate the words coming out of my mouth, but I can't do as much. I mean, I can't mm-hmm. do as much. Like, there just has to be much more rest in my life than I am naturally comfortable with.
Yeah, you have to put some of that stuff aside. That's something I've had to learn as well, putting stuff aside.
you know, leaving things undone. I'm like, oh my God, I cannot leave these things undone. You know, things cannot be undone, but they have to be undone.
They can.
Right?
Yes,
it turns out that they can't. I've had to, and I feel like these things sound small, but they're not. Like, I've had to, my kids, I homeschool them, but they go to a tutorial once a week. Some years they've gone twice a week. So they do have outside accountability, and I've had to go to teachers and say, we're not doing this assignment. You know, we have decided that it's too much for us this week, and we're just literally not going to do it. You know, and that's hard. I have been a person her whole life who needed to check all the boxes.
Right.
You know, it took me a long time to learn that. When you homeschool your kids, like, I felt like, oh, I'm dropping the ball. If I don't check every single box, if they can't color within the lines and read by five, and, you know, then I'm failing. I'm failing. And if I've chosen to homeschool them, I better be doing a darn good job, you know, because it's all on me. And so the honest truth is the biggest thing that I have learned and that helps me the most is giving myself grace.
Yes.
The hardest thing I do, because my mind wants to tell me a million reasons why that's not okay.
Right.
You know, why giving myself grace is a big fat failure.
Right. You know? Well, you know, women have a substantially higher rate of autoimmune disease than men do. And I honestly and truly believe that what you are talking about right now is a huge part of that, because we are so hard on ourselves as women, and we take on so much and we carry so much burden. We can't let it all go. So what you're saying right now is, you know, I'm sure that women listening are really connecting with this,
you know, and I do things like I'll take Epsom salt baths and put lavender in it. I mean, I go for walks. For the past, like, year and a half, I've done Pure Bar, which has been great for me because I try CrossFit and things like that. And for me, those things were just too hard for my body, just kind of broke me down. They would wreck my hormones and stuff. I used to run, but once again, like I mentioned earlier, like, chronic cardio is also hard on me.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me a long time to kind of find my sweet spot where, you know, I could do what I could do and actually keep up with. I could do anything. I can still pretty much do anything for a short amount of time, but what can I do and really be consistent that's not breaking me down? So that's, and the same thing actually applies with diet. It took me a really long time to figure that out too. I did all sorts of elimination diets. I did Krista Arrecchio's, like, and Sean.
The Gut Thrive.
The Gut Thrive. I did Gut Thrive. So I did homeopathics. I did LED light therapy, which was fantastic. I've done acupuncture. I have done, gosh, what else? Jamie, I've done so many things. I've done sauna, which I loved. And some of these things I still do intermittently. Some things I only did for a season, you know, some things I did until I ran out of money, whatever. So, the biggest thing has been, like I said, giving myself grace, resting. Like, this kind of makes me tear up, but not looking to the outside, not comparing myself to what other people are doing, what other people look like. You were talking about, you know, like, kind of the difference between men and women. Like, you know, if a man is hungry, he's going to go get something to eat. You know, a woman often looks around like, oh, is it time to eat? Can I eat? You know, like, what should I have? And not just about food, but sometimes about everything. You know, like, are my kids measuring up? Am I doing this wrong? You know, like, oftentimes I don't mean to, like, be down on men because I love men, you know, but, like, that stuff just doesn't faze them. They go on, you know, about their business. They don't necessarily care what Joe Blow's doing, you know, and allowing myself to kind of do what I want to do and be who I am without looking behind me and looking sideways and seeing what she's doing and how is she performing. And it's still the kind of the hardest part in, you know, in our culture, for me anyway, but it's the best part. The more that I tune into what does my body say to eat, because it really will tell me. Like, I really will know. I really do know when I'm hungry, and I really do know what I want when I tune in.
It's that self-love that we have such a hard time as women giving ourselves.
it's hard.
We can't give ourselves permission.
Giving it to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I took care of these babies to, you know, and nursed them until, like, they were literally killing me. You know, like, I was so stubborn, I was going to let them actually kill me. But I couldn't, I could not. It was so hard to turn that around to myself.
Right. So that's an, you know, that's an emotional piece that you experienced, you know, as an individual, going back to just the journey, all of the health issues that you had over a period of many, many years, how did that, you know, how did that impact your daily life, your interactions with your family, your extended family, your friends, your husband?
Well, it impacted every single thing. You know, there is nothing that's been left untouched. And I think a lot of it started with my health journey. We've had a lot of other things, you know, that have gone on in side by side with that. Because of all those things, basically every thread has been pulled for us. You know, like everything got unraveled to, you know, like its lowest common denominator. And, you know, it's allowed me to several things. Like, I mean, a lot of the gifts have been that I'm more compassionate than I ever was.
Right.
I heard so many things like, you don't look sick, you seem fine, or whatever. And so even just through little comments like that, I learned not just about health stuff, but just how true it is that you really don't know what is going on with somebody. I mean, you just don't know, almost ever. You can be in the same house with your spouse, living with them, and not really know what's going on, you know, on the inside for somebody. So I'm not nearly as judgmental as I used to be. And, you know, my compassion, it feels like, for me anyway, is, you know, endless. Something else, I've also learned about where to put up boundaries. That, you know, there are certain people that I just don't want that intimate relationship with anymore, you know? And that wasn't a gift that I gave myself, you know, before. And now I do. It doesn't mean that I'm ugly or hateful or unkind, but just like, oh, wait, this is not a place where I'm going to be that intimate anymore.
I don't need
I don't need
to allow space for this person in my life.
So I'm choosing about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it impacts how I parent, because it's allowed me to give so much grace to my kids where I wasn't. And it's allowed me to be like so grateful for what they give me, because through all of this stuff, they have just been, you know, nothing but full of grace and forgiveness. Like when I've had to say, I can't do that, you know, I'm too sick, we're going to homeschool from the bed today, we can't make that field trip. You know, like, it's okay, mommy, we love you. What can we do for you?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And that's the only response I've ever gotten from them. Even now, I mean, my boys are 15 and, you know, you hear such stories about teenagers and how hard it is, you know, to raise teenagers, and they are nothing but a joy, you know, and I hope, girl, you know, I hope that maybe I had something to do with that.
Yes, you did.
So, because they are, you know, just better.
I mean, you gave those babies melted butter for 14 months.
Melted butter, right? They took everything from me.
Of course you had something to do with that.
I think, you know, that I have been able to model... Well, me and my husband both, we've been able to model grace. We've been able to model starting over. I mean, we have started over. We have started our lives over at midlife, you know.
Right.
We have, you know, we kind of say, like, we've been through the refiner's fire, you know, and it was painful. Like, it was painful. But what has come out of the other side is beautiful. I mean, that's where you get the art. That's where you get the transformation. Like, if you don't go through the fire, if you numb yourself through that whole thing, then you don't get the beauty on the other side. So I do get such a joy, I think, from now knowing that the fire's not going to burn me up.
Right.
Like, it's not going to. I'm fireproof. You know, like, I've done this.
Yeah.
You know,
you've been to those deep, dark recesses of hell, yeah, and you've bounced right back from it. And I think this message right now that you're delivering is so important for people who are out there struggling with autoimmunity and other chronic health issues to realize, you know, your doctors weren't delivering you any hope. They were saying, these are some medications I can offer you. This is what you're going to be on for the rest of your life. You're just going to have to live with it. That's all there is. But that's not the reality. Not the reality. There is hope. There is hope. And you have far more control over your circumstances than we've been led to believe. And I think that that's the message that you're delivering right now. And that's really what this podcast is all about. We do have hope. We do have more control than we've been led to believe. That is amazing. So that, I mean, that was going to be one of my questions. What were some, you know, some improvements or unexpected side effects that came out of this for you?
And I think, you know, I mean, I think that's it. I just realized what I'm capable of. To, you know, like, okay, I can do hard things, you know. So when the next hard thing came along, I thought, all right, I've got a history of doing hard things. I can do this, you know. And there's been a lot of hard things even since the autoimmune journey, but we're kind of just now getting on the other side of that, you know, and seeing the fruit of some of that hard work. And when I say hard work, you know, yes, I did the diet. Yes, I did the green juice. Yes, I did that, you know, all those million things that were hard for a minute. But like I said, the hardest work that I've done has been on the inside, you know, sitting in the places of discomfort when I really wanted to stuff my face with chocolate, you know, or, you know, having a hard conversation. Had a lot of hard conversations since, you know, since the beginning of this journey, even starting with the doctor, speaking my own truth all the time. That's hard. And I know there are a lot of women that don't want to do it. It's not easy. But I've gotten better and better at saying what's true for me, you know, not in an unkind way, never being unkind, but not shrinking back into the background, right, you know?
And self-advocating. Yeah. And when you're told that you're just depressed and you're just a hypochondriac, rising above that and saying, no, I'm right. I know there's something else, and I'm going to dig deeper and figure out what that is. That self-advocacy piece.
I still doubted it, you know, along the way, but the longer I go, you know, the easier it's gotten, and the better I've gotten at turning those voices down that say, well, maybe you did make that up. Like, or, you know, you might be wrong, so don't say anything. You're probably going to look stupid, you know. They're not going to agree with you. I still get those voices sometimes, but I have learned that, I mean, my intuition has been spot on. It's been spot on the whole time.
Of course.
You know?
That old adage, listen to your gut.
Right? Listen to your gut. I mean, it's just, it couldn't be more true. The wisdom for me, I mean, I think forever, the wisdom's in your body. You know, it's not in your mind. Your mind will just tell you six ways from Sunday all over the place. You know, you can make that do whatever you want. But my body just never leads me the wrong direction. And so, like, I'm going to be 40 next year, and I'm just, like, so excited about what my 40s can look like in the place that I'm at now. Yeah. You know?
The 40s have been my best decade so far. Yeah.
So I've decided that mine are going to be fabulous.
They are, of course.
Yeah. Well, good.
You're in a good place.
I'm glad
you
played before me.
This has been an amazing interview, and I think, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for my listeners to hear this, because you just have so many gems that you've thrown out there for us, and I'm just super excited to put this out there. Two last things before we say goodbye. You know, I ask this to a lot of my guests. If you were to give one piece of advice to somebody who's been on your journey or is on your journey and haven't come out the other side yet, and they're struggling with some chronic health issues, and they're just fed up with that cycle of trial and error and being told through conventional medicine that, you know, they're just depressed, or they're a hypochondriac, or, you know, getting that kind of messaging, you know, what kind of advice would you give them?
You know, I think probably the first thing I would say is just kind of, we were talking about, trust your gut. If you really know, like, if you know, you know. Mm-hmm. So don't let somebody convince you otherwise. Don't let somebody else take that power away from you. And then seek support. Like, I have been so blown away by even, like, you guys, the people that I have met along this journey, and that oftentimes they were more supportive than the people in my real life. You know, I can't tell you how many people, honestly, kind of fell away through some of these hard mm-hmm. times and processes with my husband and I. Like, it got hard and they didn't know what to say and it was uncomfortable. They didn't like having those uncomfortable words like I was talking about.
Yeah.
And so they left.
So now they're out, right?
You know, some of them, you know, they tried, but as soon as it got, you know, there were, you know, fan, like, we didn't have money to do certain things. We were spending it on, you know, medical treatments and whatever else. And so, well, they were doing things that cost money. So once they knew I couldn't afford it, well, I guess we just won't invite her anymore. You know, and right. So then they just fell away. So I would say seek help online. And that is not something that I would have ever thought that I would say. But there I have met, like, some people that, you know, now that I'm able, like, I'm flying across the country to see these people that showed up for me online, you know.
Right.
So there is real support and real connection there. Mm-hmm. If you aren't finding it in your real life.
Yeah.
You know, call me.
Yeah.
Like, I'll talk to anybody. Call me.
You talked about the money piece, you know, you mentioned it earlier in the episode about, you know, the amount of money that you threw down on your various treatments, acupuncture. Yeah. However, you know, that's one of the things that I find with people is ultimately the types of treatments that got you to over that hump were treatments that you had to fork out your own money for. They weren't treatments that insurance was going to cover. And that's one of the biggest obstacles that I find mm-hmm. with people is them saying, oh, well, I can't really afford that. Well, you know, how many cars have you owned in your life? And what do you pay on a monthly car payment for your
right.
car? And when your mechanic says you need $2,000 worth of repairs or your car's not going to be running in a couple months, you're going to pay that $2,000 for repair, right? So how many bodies are you going to live in during your lifetime? One.
Right.
And that body is worth living
right.
in high quality for, you know, and so it
yep,
is
absolutely.
Worth it. Yeah. You know, find that money that's necessary to pay for, you know, help that's going to actually get you over that hump to where you need to
well,
be.
Well, that's another thing I would say. There was a season where I really, like, I did have to ask for help. And that was hard. I needed help with house cleaning. I needed help with the kids some. I needed help financially. And you know, don't underestimate people. Like, sometimes I had people at my church that just, I would just go to church and they would say, oh, come to the office. Somebody left something for you. And it would just be $500 in an envelope with no name, you know, mm-hmm. because people knew what we were going through. That probably happened 5 or 6 times. You know, and that wasn't my asking directly. This were just people that through word of mouth, I guess, knew what we were going through.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I would even go so far as to say, as nowadays, I'm pretty bold. Start a GoFundMe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, reach out. Tell people what you need, like if you really need it. You would be surprised in the ways in which people will step up.
Yeah.
So
if you put it out there into the universe, you know, you put
right.
it out there into the
yeah.
universe, the universe delivers what it is you need when
it
you
delivers.
Need it. Yeah, as long as
right.
you're asking.
So
right.
You know,
awesome.
I mean, I think where you're asking from matters. You know, but if you're in the right space doing the asking, things will show up.
Yeah, of course they will.
Yep.
All right. So in closing here, you come over this hurdle and you are now in a much better place and you're
yeah.
you're putting this experience to a better good now and you know, helping the world. Tell us about what you're doing now as a career and, you know, where you're going with this. How can
yeah.
people find you?
Well, I'm not all that easy to find at this point. I'm just now working on my website and stuff. But, I mentioned earlier that my degree is in psychology, and I got through half that program in that master's program in social work when I got so, so sick that my doctor literally said, you've got to stop. So because I don't learn my lessons easily, just, you know, about 6 months ago, I decided, oh, I'm going to go back to graduate school, and I'm going to do this again. And, right? And then through just this wonderful, like, synchronicity, I heard about Martha Beck's life coaching program, and it just so perfectly fell into place for me to do that. So I'm about halfway through that program right now, and I decided to forego getting back into the master's track. So yeah, that's what I'm doing. I have some actual clients now, and it's super fun. And Martha's great. I just, you know, I knew honestly going in that I had had enough life experience to be useful and to be good at this job, but my type A self really loves a good framework. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get some more education, get that framework. And I'm so glad I did that, really. It's been worth every penny, and I love it. And that, once again, I've made, like, some fantastic friends. And, you know, being in the same space with people is so precious, and getting to share that language and share that bond is just lovely beyond words. So that's what I'm doing currently. I'm taking clients now. I would say, you know, I'm still kind of in the early stages at the moment. What my specialty is really helping women work through those stories of not enoughness, you know, right. Those places where they're just stuck and, you know, maybe they don't feel like there's any other options, ruled by fear and that voice in your mind. You know, I have really learned how to transform that for myself, and it's just made a world of difference. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, where I'm at the moment. And I mean, I'm on Facebook. It's just Corey Broughton. And I'm on Instagram, still Corey Broughton.
Can you spell that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Corey, C-O-R-R-I-E, and Broughton is B-R-O-U-G-H-T-O-N. Those are just personal pages, but I'm absolutely happy they're public. Everybody can be there. I would love to see anybody. And yeah, I think you can find an email probably attached to one of those as well. So yeah, I'm always happy to talk to anybody. You know that,
right? I think anybody listening to this podcast, Corey, is like, oh, I would love to have a conversation with her.
I'd love to never get a word in edgewise. It'd be great.
So you don't quite have your website going yet, so I can't send people there yet.
Yeah, we're actually we're supposed to take photos tomorrow. The kids are out of town at the grandparents' house, so yeah, I've got Sean's voice echoing in my head, and there should be a YouTube channel on the way, and I really honestly hadn't done that because I didn't have the website finished. So I've decided to just let it be imperfect and start where I can start, and, you know, we'll just take it as it comes.
Looking forward to hearing more from you in the coming months.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you, Sammy.
This has been amazing, Corey. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, my gosh, it was my pleasure.
Awesome. We'll talk to you soon. Hey friends, thank you so much for sharing your time with me today by listening in on the show. I am so grateful and honored to have you here. There are so many people out there today who are struggling with chronic health conditions and caught up in the cycle of trial and error who could really benefit from the information in this show. So please subscribe and share this podcast with anyone who would benefit from the information. Also, please support the show right now by taking a couple of minutes to leave me a review by tapping the review link in the episode show notes. Your review will help the show reach more people who will benefit from the information. And while you're at it, please visit me at my website, thrivingprimallywellness.com, and sign up for my newsletter so that I can keep you updated with my weekly blogs where I share relevant topics to support you on your journey towards better health.